Good morning, and thank you, Cara, and thank you for the organizers of this session. I'll start with the expected, just to declare that there's no conflict of interest, although I think we all have conflicts of interest. And okay, the title of this presentation is War is also a determinant of occupational and environmental health. And the title, as you see, actually states the obvious. And I think the key word there in this title is the word also. And so this objective of my presentation is, again, not to present data. I don't have a study, actually, to share with you. And it's practically more of an essay. It's simply an attempt to remind ourselves of the obvious. I built my argument on a couple of personal experiences that made me reflect on the topic of my presentation. I presented some of these ideas in a previous conference, EcoHealth Conference in London in August earlier this year. It's still work in progress, and it will definitely benefit from your feedback and also even rejection of what I'm going to say. Let me start with three anecdotes. The first, actually, as Cara mentioned, I received my MPH and Doctor of Public Health from the Johns Hopkins School of Hygiene and Public Health, as it was named then. I joined Hopkins in 1984, after completing my medical studies at the American University of Beirut, living through years of civil war, almost 10 years of civil war, and the 1982 Israeli invasion of Lebanon, which ended, actually, in the occupation of our capital, Beirut. My MPH year, which was concentrating in occupational health, was rather turbulent and painful, I have to say. For months, I could not connect to the lectures, to courses, and what the professors told us. They taught us the principles of safety, low toxicity, long-term exposures, permissible exposures, preventive measures and policies, and regulations. They told us, rightfully so, that one life lost is too many. That was more or less sort of the driving motto of the whole year of MPH. But for a person who lived 10 years of civil war, that claimed few lives every day, and who lived through the 1982 Israeli invasion, which alone claimed more than 20,000 lives in a few months, this slogan or motto was a hard call. War, throughout my stay at Hopkins for more than 6 years, was never considered a potential context for occupational and environmental health. Never heard that word. The other anecdote. On July 12, 2006, Israel initiated a major offensive against Lebanon for 33 days after Hezbollah killed 8 of its soldiers and kidnapped 2. Close to 1 million people, i.e., one quarter of the Lebanese population, were displaced within 1 week. More than 1,000 were killed. More than 1,000 were killed, 4,000 injured, roads, bridges, infrastructures were destroyed. Our school, the Faculty of Health Sciences, switched gears during the war, and some faculty and students joined hands with others, and we got involved in relief efforts. 10 days into the war, I received a fax from the funding agency that supports one of my community-based research projects that examines the linkages between water, people, and health in a relatively poor town in North Lebanon. The fax informs me that all funds for the study will be frozen until further notice. Yet another indicator, another painful indicator, that environmental and occupational health is decontextualized. War is seen as an aberration, a temporary occurrence, after which everything, including occupational and environmental health, just goes back to normal. Earlier this year, I received a request to review a manuscript submitted to a regional health journal. The researchers assessed the exposure of gas station attendants to lead. They reported on their knowledge, attitudes, and practices, and recommended an awareness campaign, the use of personal protective equipment, and the implementation of a comprehensive occupational health and safety program in all gas stations. You may agree or disagree with the author's recommendation. Personally, I disagree, but this was not my concern, actually. My concern was the fact that the context of the study, or practically the lack of context of this study. There was no mention. This study actually was, in fact, conducted in Gaza only a few months after the Israeli incursion in December 2008. Yet, there was no mention of the war context in the paper or of the blockade which is still imposed by Israel on the Palestinians in Gaza. The authors suggested a textbook recommendation, occupational health in all gas stations in Gaza. It might as well have been in Denver or Casablanca or Kinshasa. Does it matter, after all, if we just use the same recommendations? Our colleagues, interestingly, they also reported that gas attendants with higher education were more aware of lead toxicity than the less educated. Interesting. But they failed to comment on their finding that more than 50% of the gas attendants they interviewed were university graduates. It's a sad example of occupational and environmental health totally out of context. At the Faculty of Health Sciences, where I work and currently I serve as dean, we're as guilty. The table of contents that I will share with you, the table of contents of two books that we published, our faculty published in 1984 and 1994, on Beirut 1984 and Beirut 1984-1994, just look at the tables of contents. Introduction methodology, demographics, environmental health conditions, morbidity, risk factors, utilization of health service, maternal health, dental health. 10 years later, we publish a follow-up, introduction, survey methodology, demographics, utilization of health services, morbidity, reproductive and child health, and the health concluding remarks. None of the two books actually wrote or discussed the health of the population within the context of a long-lasting civil war mixed with a couple of major Israeli invasions. They were just like any other book on population health. I can share with you and can claim that things have changed in the faculty over the last 10 years. My personal experiences and observations that I'm sharing with you can be substantiated, actually. We search Google Scholar and PubMed for the last 5 years, 2005-2010, using the keywords war, conflict, intersected with health. It's a bit of a crude approach, since the intention was not to be exhaustive. We identified 102 articles that discussed health or health issue in war or conflict setting. Only 4 reported on a pre-conflict situation, and the others 29 on conflict and 69 on post-conflict. Almost on all of them, the health outcome was well-defined and the relationship examined was a linear cause-effect relationship. Exposure to war was the independent. Specific health outcome was the dependent. War, again, is deprived of its complexity and presented as a setting, present, not present, exposed, not exposed. Let me share with you then 4 cases from 3 countries in the Arab region to illustrate that war is complex, and we tend to forget that. 2 of these come actually from Iraq, and 1 from Lebanon, and 1 from the occupied Palestinian territories. I will start with the case of the marshlands in southern Iraq. Many Arabs, actually, and perhaps Iraqis, tend to forget that. These marshlands, actually, known in Arabic as Ahwar, they spread over 20,000 square kilometers in the 50s, were inhabited by more than 400,000. They served as sanctuary for migratory birds and the witness of thousands of years of heritage culture there. Just show you some pictures. This is where they lived. And they actually dependent on, they planted rice, others. But the Iran-Iraq wars, efforts by Saddam Hussein to root out the resistance in the south, and of course water development projects led to the drying up of the swamps to less than 800 square kilometers. I'm talking 20,000 square kilometers down to 800, less than 800. 400,000 people led to less than 60,000 people in 2005. There are current efforts to revive the marshlands. My question here is, what happened to those who were displaced? What occupations did they end up picking after losing their lands and livelihoods? What impact did the political environment have on the physical, ecological one? Questions that we tend in the field of occupational environmental health not to ask, not to deal with. Another sort of the case, some of these questions actually could be answered in part by the studies that assessed the lives of displaced Iraqi families within or outside Iraq. More than 2.5 million Iraqis have fled their country since 2003. 2.5 million. And the subsequent, of course, after the 2003 invasion and the subsequent cycles of violence. Men are smuggled into surrounding countries. They work illegally under the worst work conditions. Women are separated from their husbands and families, and some survive as sex workers. Well, I ask, isn't this occupational health? Can we then study the risk of AIDS and sexually transmitted diseases in this group outside the context of what I just spoke about? Moving closer to home, close to 1 million Lebanese were displaced from their homes during the 33-day July 2006 war on Lebanon. Half of them came from South Lebanon. And at the end of the war, they returned to a region that was at least 1 million cluster bombs richer. Farmlands were infested with cluster bombs and landmines, which prohibited people from going to their farms. They had a choice, either not to go, burn their farms to get rid of the landmines and the cluster bombs, or not to go at all. So people had to look for alternatives in residence and occupations. Lands were deserted. Again, I ask, isn't this occupational and environmental health? Last but not least, I go to the occupied Palestinian territories, where a 774-kilometer-long, 8-meter-high wall cuts across the territories, uprooting trees, dividing lands, and isolating towns. Hundreds of workers lost their jobs, and thousands slave every day to get the work, waiting occasionally for hours at roadblocks, or driving 30 to 60 minutes to reach a workplace that is 5 minutes away. We were taught that injuries that are sustained by workers on their way to work are considered work-related. We all remember that. So how does this differ? A group of researchers from the occupied Palestinian territories, Beer Zeit University, inquired about quality of life and assessed humiliation. The questions they posed in this study, which was published in Public Health Journal, the questions they posed are telling in their own right. Have a quick look at the questions. Responders were asked if they were stripped, searched, evacuated, thrown out of their houses, beaten, used as human shields, exposed to bombs, shot at, hit, detained, interrogated. And my question is, can we label these as occupational hazards since they're happening on the way to their workplace? And how does humiliation interact with the more traditional work hazards and with productivity? I pose these questions based on personal observations and experiences, not that I have an answer. I frankly don't have an answer. I'm simply saying that war is complex, and in our part of the world and many other parts of the world, because we're not an exception. This is a map that actually sort of the reverse. This is the global peace index. So if you're in the blue, you have very high index of peace, and if you're in the red, you're in a very low index of peace, or so more conflict. So the orange and red, and you see that this is mostly our region here. So this is either in conflict or at risk of conflict. So the in our part of the world and many others, we are always living in a state of potential conflict, a state that politicians label no war and no peace, a state of perpetual anxiety that may escalate into a full-fledged war every few years. This is the context of occupational and environmental health in these regions. And we have to remember that. And it's time we see it this way and study it as such. Occupational and environmental health professionals have to break out of the rigid boundaries of their fields, of my field, of our field. See the bigger picture and take risks. I'm talking about intellectual risks. However, they cannot do it alone. They have to join forces with economists, anthropologists, and social scientists together with environmentalists, civil society representatives, and the like. Occupational and environmental health cannot be measured only by PPMs and number of chest X-rays opacities. It is also measured in how much people have a say or a choice in where they work and where they live. Wars rob people of such choices, and that is the heart of what should concern us in occupational and environmental health. Just this is sort of a quick thing here. If you look at this is war affecting physical environment, livelihood, and health, and there's a lot of interaction in between. And what you see here, that most of the studies have actually examined one of the arrows and not sort of the overall picture. I will add to this that in our part of the world, and that's actually not our part, it's most of the world, and this is something that we all have to remember, that most of the world now is actually going through sort of a stable condition of conflict. Actually, we don't have a pre-conflict, conflict, and post-conflict. We have pre-conflict, conflict, and post-conflict all at the same time, okay? So while we're still now managing the post-conflict area, a period of the previous wars, and we're living in a, hopefully not, but we're living in an anxiety of something that could happen, and so it's all happening at the same time. It's not sort of the clear-cut thing that I would say traditionally we're used to, that war is something that happens, it has a starting date, it has an ending date, it might extend over a year or 5 years or 6 years, it might kill 10,000 people, it might kill 20 million people, but the point is that it has a starting point and an end point, and then you start reconstruction. This is not the case in what is really happening now in conflict areas in the world. What's happening is that all three phases are happening at the same time, and we have to keep that in mind. So I repeat, wars rob people of such choices, and that's at the heart of what should concern us at occupational and environmental health. That is one of the many battles we, occupational and environmental health professionals, should fight for social justice. I'll stop here, and I thank you for listening. I want to thank Lynn Haraki, Suzanne Khishin, Nasr Yassin, my colleagues and assistants in the faculty for helping me in preparing this presentation. Thank you.